Look at co-producer Keith here. Ah,
appreciate
check
it.
Your tone, bitch.
Congratulations, everyone, on another beautiful week. I am your host, Stephen Woodson, and joining me, as always, is my vicious co-host, Keith Parker.
Roar.
You call me vicious?
So scary.
I am but a teddy bear, sir. I am not vicious.
Oh, man. And you're listening to Congratulations, Your Divorce. Parker, how's your day going, man?
It's going well, sir. It is going well. I am winding up the week again. Another, you know, same cereal, different bowl, it feels like at this point. Just in the middle of busy season at work. But once again, getting the boys back. Got some fun activities playing this weekend with them. So just once again, another weekend of dadding that I always, always look forward to and enjoy. So
I feel like this is just a weekly time for you to tell us that you're dadding again this weekend.
It kind of feels like it, but my life has been in such a pattern here lately of just being consumed by work and then immediately being consumed by fatherhood. That's pretty much what it's been. It's projects and user stories followed immediately by games, practices, laundry, dishes, and bedtime. Like that has been my cycle for a few months now. So pretty predictable.
Yeah. Mundane.
But it's peaceful and I love it. It's my Monday. What about you, man? How are things going on your side of the fence?
Oh, they're going okay. They're going all right. I'm tired. It's been a long week for me too. I'm doing some home renovations and amongst work and everything else that's going on in my life. So I'm a little bit exhausted, but I had a really interesting conversation with my in-laws the other day. We were talking about the Enneagram, and my mother-in-law is trying to figure out her type. And it got me thinking that we have not talked about the Enneagram on the show. And I've been wanting to do that for a hot minute. So I'm hoping we can do that tonight.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly how we skip past it, considering it is Stephen Woodson's view upon the world. Hopefully you don't take that in a derogatory sense. But
no, I love it.
I know how important it is. Yeah, I know how important it is to you. And when you first showed me the Enneagram and tried to explain to me what it was, I was really confused by it because it just seemed like to me, right? Don't get offended at me. I don't want you coming to the fucking microphone.
I'm already offended.
Triggered. But to me, it just seemed like a Myers-Briggs test, but with a few more questions, right? It just seemed like another personality test that kind of put me as like a lion or an otter or something like that. But instead of that, you had types. So
yeah,
I was skeptical at first, but for you, I mean, you did a very good job of explaining everything and kind of breaking it down for me.
No pressure to do that same thing tonight. Yeah. I mean, the Enneagram does look like a lot of other personality tests if you want it to look like that. I'm sure that astrology and Myers-Briggs and whatever these animal personality types that you keep referencing over and over in our show that always confuse me, but sound exciting because I want to figure out what kind of animal I am.
Now I gotta find the test.
They all have their validity. They all have their weight. The thing that sets the Enneagram apart for me is its depth. That there's an answer for everything within the terms of the Enneagram, because you don't just type as one of these nine dominant personality types, but you have wings that you gravitate towards, you have subtypes, and then you have triads that you can fit into, counter type. Man, there's so much that I'm sure we won't even cover a touch of it tonight. But the Enneagram is a tool and it's a language. It's allowed me to compartmentalize the way that I view people and certain interactions with my friends and other relationships.
Well, and when you were explaining to me, talking about the triads and the wings and all of that, I think that's the part to me that kind of caught my ear when you were first explaining it to me, because to me, humans are infinitely complex and there's not going to be a 100 question quiz that's going to be able to tell you exactly what kind of human you are and how all of your experiences have led up to exactly this moment. And this is exactly who you are. I never believed any of it. I think it could get close. I think there's some coincidences, but I think the aspect of the Enneagram that really still fascinates me is the complexity of it. It doesn't call you a type six, and then it tells you, this is what you are. Here's your fears. Here's your morals, right? Here's your crutches, and then it sends you on your merry way. It really does have that granularity to it that allows it, like you said, to become a language and a tool for you to kind of understand people that you may not understand or know how to communicate with.
It is. And what's fascinating is that I like to look at the Enneagram like this. Most other personality typing systems out there are like your Ashley's Furniture or your Home Goods, you know, any other big box supplier. What the Enneagram to me is a Lowe's or a Home Depot. It's a place where you go get the tools that you need to build the furniture you want, not just go pick out some cookie cutter furniture to stick in your house. Does that make sense at all?
Well, I'm following you a little bit because I'm a little bit lazy. And so I was with you. I was like, okay, you know, non-personal, personal, but now it sounds like I got to build my personality. I already struggle with that as it is. Why are you going to make me build it again? It hurts. Don't make me do that. What kind of test am I taking? I think it's kind of like an IKEA maybe, where you just really is, like you said, it's customizable, right?
It can be. Yes. For someone like you who may not want to put the time into this, it is your IKEA. You can go find a decent template of something that you're looking for, a couple pieces of furniture, maybe some modular cabinets that you want to throw in your kitchen. The Enneagram is malleable like that. It's flexible. You can utilize it however you want to.
Okay. Level set me a little bit before we get too deep into the actual Enneagram and start talking like nuts and bolts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you see what I did?
Yeah, that was good.
Well, I'll be here all week. Thanks.
You cheesy ass.
Bro, smoke good all day right here, motherfucker. Let's go. What I'm asking is like 0 day, right? Where did Steven hear about? Because I heard about the Enneagram from you. So who is your Steven? Who did you just Google it? Did a pastor show it to you? Did your mama show it to you? How did you stumble upon this?
Okay. So believe it or not, and I always find this really fascinating considering how valuable I find the Enneagram in my life. My ex-wife was actually the one to show me the Enneagram. So for anyone
a broken clock is right twice a day, ain't it?
So for anyone questioning the validity of how I feel about this, I tried so hard to disprove all this. I did not want her to be right. So when she introduces it to me, she is extremely excited because she feels like she's finally seen and she's finally heard, and she reads this definition of what her type is, and she takes the exam, and her reaction was very much like taking an astrology test. So I found it very, very surface level. Now, granted, she was a fairly surface level type of person, so it didn't carry a lot of weight with me. She was talking about it. I put it off. Then, you know, this goes on for about a month or so. Then we're all at my friend's house for dinner one night, and she's talking about her Enneagram number to all of our other friends. And two of the friends in this group are both therapists. They are well-versed in the Enneagram and have been studying it for quite a while. And so they were going in deep with all this information and knowledge to her. So I'm sitting over at the table just eating my dinner, and I'm hearing all this side conversation going on. And I'm about 4 months into therapy at this point. So I am picking up on cues that the things that they're saying sound very mental health related, very healing oriented or growth minded. And those are all things that I was I was very interested at the time because it was all new and fresh and I was learning a lot about myself. So I'm intrigued, but I'm still just very biased. I don't believe it's as good as they say it is.
And is it becoming because it came from your ex? Is that why?
It's because it's a personality test and it came from my ex. Like, those are two things that this is the truth. Those are two things I just didn't care that much about.
I mean, that's fine, right? So, that's the curious part is you're so passionate about it now. So it coming from kind of a generic thing that you didn't care about from a person that you already didn't like and was kind of already on the outs with.
Yeah.
That's what's fascinating to me is you were already 0-2. Like, it shouldn't have resonated with you because you didn't really trust the source.
So the two therapists in our friend group, I did trust them and I respect them greatly. So the more they talked about it, the more I did become intrigued. And this casual dinner conversation starts reaching a point where it's piquing my interest just more and more. The conversation's getting a little more in depth, and it finally stirs up enough in me to argue with them. I felt like it was just another personality test. So I started pushing that point. I was like, what makes this different? And the only thing that they said is don't knock it till you try it. And that really frustrated me because I wanted an answer. I'm not an argumentative person, but I wanted an argument because I felt pretty sure that like these self-assessment personality tests are just mostly shit.
Yeah.
They only said, just try it. They were not going to argue it. I kind of enjoyed that too. They were like, this tool will speak for itself, but you have to be willing to give it a shot. I didn't know how deep that was at the time, but it was pretty fucking deep. So I get on the App Store and download the Enneagram app. and start taking the test. It's like a 10-minute quiz. I find all the questions pretty intriguing. This version is free. It's still one of my favorite versions to pass along to other people. I'll throw a link to it in the show notes. But it's a free, very simple version that has just enough in-depth questions, but your answers are just yes, kind of, and no. So I'm taking the test. I'm enjoying the questions. I finally get done with it, and I turn to the rest of the group, and I tell them, well, it looks like I won. I'm a type 1. Didn't know what that meant at all. I read the little description that it gave me, and it seemed like it was pretty accurate. And what surprised me was the shock from everybody. I mean, they all, like two of them literally gasped, my two therapist friends, like they literally gasped because they could not fathom that I was a type 1. And that played that played on a lot of emotional ties for me because I was like, wait, this feels pretty accurate to me. And what this description says about who I supposedly am. And the fact that they were so shocked by it led me to believe that however I view myself and who Steven Whitson is, it was not who they saw.
So did y'all get into that? Like, I'm curious because obviously I know you, I've known you for a long time, but what was the discrepancies? Because I mean, you don't have to go into the whole thing of what a type one is, right? But you can give me a baseline and then what your friends were saying, because that would, I know that would catch me off guard if my friends were just like, oh, pearls clasped. Oh no. Like what? You are a type one. I'd be like, bitch, why are you looking at me like that? Don't.
Yeah. That was kind of my reaction. I wanted to clutch my own pearls because like it made sense to me. So a type one is a perfectionist. All right. We're a reformer. And what we do, our driving motivation is that we're not good enough. So we're going to do everything within our power to make ourselves and the world good enough. And that maybe one day we will have earned the right for God or the universe to say, you can rest. You've done enough. Congratulations. And that meant a lot to me. What the number that they thought I was a type 5. Some of them thought I was a type 2. I think my ex actually thought I was a type 6. I'll get into more of this later, but those personality types are extremely different, specifically for the type 5. Like, they're very reserved. They're very quiet individuals. They're pulled back, and they don't ever speak unless they know all the facts. And I can relate to that, but that's not who I am. That's not what drives me. Being good, trying to do the right thing, that's what drives me.
Okay, hold on, because the part that I'm trying to figure out is the discrepancy between how you saw yourself and how your friend group saw yourself. Because your test said you were a type 1, and then the peanut gallery goes 2, 5, 6, because it wasn't like, because these people knew the Enneagram, and it wasn't like they collectively across the board said like, oh yeah, Steven's a 4, and then you're like, no, I'm a 1. It was each one had a different number. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, were you kind of showing different traits to each person? And so that's how they were categorizing you, or like what was going on there?
That was such an eye-opening moment for me because of that. At this time in my life, most of who Steven is a secret. The burden that I'm carrying, that my wife is cheating on me all the time, the pain and trauma that comes with, the amount of energy that I was using to protect her identity and to not slip up and accidentally share something that's going on with us, like the real things that are going on with us. Like, I could gripe to coworkers or say the random thing of like, we got into it last night, so I'm really tired today. I could do that, but I could never tell them why we got into it. And I learned in that moment, they didn't know the real me. One of the friends that we live closest to, like, they saw me as a 2 because I was always over at their house. I was helping out. I was willing to lay sod or help build something or put up a swing set for the girls, like whatever it is. I was always there, always available. And one of the ones that thought I was a 5, they just saw me as quiet. I was never really involved in the conversation when they were around. I wasn't as close to them. And so they thought I was just very reserved and only spoke whenever I was passionate about something. And that's fine. Like, it doesn't matter if your friends see you exactly as who you are. But the kicker was my ex-wife. She thought I was a 6. 6s are loyalist. They're very authority driven. They are loyal to a fault. They have high fear, high anxiety, which kind of keeps them in check. Mm-hmm. She saw me as, and I'm not saying that 6s are this, but she saw me as a very meek, mild, small, timid man, because any boundaries that I could have, I just never kept. And I was always fearful, always scared of the next time that she's going to cheat on me. So the version of me that she saw shook me the most, because it's like my own wife, like the person that I am spending my life with, is surprised that I'm a one, is surprised that I'm a perfectionist. When I read the description and see that there's a very loud inner critic, or that my deepest fear is that I'll never be good enough. And the fact that she couldn't see that I needed to feel that I was worthy of love, worthy of happiness and joy and peace, it always bothered me. And it gave a very bright light to the disconnect that we had in our marriage, too, is that she did not see me for the type of person that I was. I honestly didn't see her for the type of person she was. Throughout her taking tests, like I still never believed her type. And honestly, me and another friend were just like pretty dead set of like, we know her type. But what I think happened is that she started getting deeper into the type that she is, and she got uncomfortable in it, and she was ashamed by some of the hard truths that are in it. And so she chose another type to feel more embodied by what that type can produce.
So not to be Captain Hindsight here, but I would argue that it probably didn't take a personality test for you to realize that your ex wasn't the person that you thought she was. So my curiosity, right, is why was the Enneagram such a big trigger for you at this point? Because it you kind of knew all of this data about these people, and you knew this data about yourself, but was it the realization of like how you were portraying yourself to other people and how they saw you? Was it the complexity of the questions? Because your marriage wasn't 100% in the best spot anyways, and you were already on your journey, right, headed where you wanted to go with therapy. So why did it weigh so much on you? Why at this moment, at this dinner table?
I would love to agree with you and say, yes, why is a personality type so jarring to me to find out that my ex isn't who she says she is? The uncomfortable truth is that it took a personality test for me to figure out that my ex isn't who she says she is. I had always had speculation, and I had always had feelings and thoughts that our marriage is a problem. It's not good. You know, like I would not let myself leave ever. Early on when she would bring up divorce, I would push that we need to fight for this marriage. But there's a lot of brainwashing that happened to me during our marriage. And so it was very surprising for me to find out that she's a very different person. Any insecurity and any anxiety, anything that happened between us, any interaction that we had in our relationship, I now had validity and solid language. I had a dictionary that I could go and pull back to.
So when you finally get yourself anchored in these key emotions or these roots, how does that change your view of your ex, or how does that play into her type and what she was seeing and like, I guess her root emotions?
I didn't get too fascinated with my ex and her type. I really didn't care. I was so fascinated with learning about myself that selfishly, I didn't pay much attention to hers. She was floating around, and every time somebody brought up something else about another type, she was relating to it and saying, you know, she felt that. She was running the classic gambit of interjecting herself into other people's stories and situations and trying to make up her own validity for herself.
Like she's trying to create relevancy in other people's stories. Like she's constantly trying to insert herself there.
Yeah. So she was a three, and threes are the achiever. Threes also have an inherent flaw of always putting on masks. So threes are very, very good about inserting themselves into another conversation and then making everyone feel like they truly belong in that conversation, even if they don't know shit about what's being said. It's a good and bad trait to have. It's very nice whenever
you're networking. Sounds pretty positive.
Yeah. Like yeah. If you can hone it, like everything else in the Enneagram, if you can hone it, like Godspeed, you are about to do some shit. So I didn't care too much about that, because as soon as I found out enough about her to see her, I just dove headfirst into my own. I started talking to my therapist about the Enneagram. I started talking more to my other friends about it, because if my ex never saw me for who I am, my friends now are starting to. I knew because I asked her. I knew my ex wasn't putting any effort into reading up on my number. You know, I did my little stint on figuring out who she was, and she did not seem to care about learning anything more about me. She already had me pegged for who I was. And honestly, I can say the same thing. Like I already had her pegged. I knew enough about her. I didn't care. but I was very curious about who I am. And so between my friends and my therapist, we start talking, and the validity that came out of those conversations, my friends actually would put in the work. They would take the time and learn more about the type one. Now, some of this was just through curiosity of the Enneagram, and some of this was because they just found out I'm a one. They want to know more about ones. And I'm going to beat this like a dead horse, but the freedom, man, that it gave me of just having a close friend come to me and address something inherently about me, and it be right, it be true, that I finally felt seen. I mean, how many times have you heard me talk about in the show that, like, I was just begging to be seen. I wanted someone to know who I was. And I finally started getting it through the Enneagram.
Well, when you say that you and your therapist and you and your friend start discussing the Enneagram, like, what do those conversations look like? Because you took a 15-question test on an app, you got your results, and as you started diving in, everything started solidifying. So what does those conversations with your friends look like? Because to me, it almost kind of sounds like a little bit like a love language, like talking about being seen and heard, being validated and things like that. So when you're going through this with your friends and you're going through the Enneagram and a type one, since that's what that's what you landed on, when they start communicating to you in that manner, does it just like rainbows and butterflies? It send all the bells and whistles off? Does it make you like the happiest it can be? Is that why it was so strong and passionate to you? Because when people communicated with you within that manner, that it was just the perfect way to be communicated with in your eyes?
So I have two answers to that. One, it was not all puppies and rainbows. I did not feel happy most of the time talking about the Enneagram. The Enneagram is very uncomfortable because it is full of hard truths. The things that I wouldn't allow myself to say about myself are right there on the page. And my friends can read it just as well as I can. So there's no avoiding it. Realizing that I'm extremely anal, that I need to have the house clean. I need to have certain other things done a specific way. I'm very controlling. It's checks and balances. My life is very, very strict, or was, right? Like I am a gray man now. It's no longer black and white. I try to live in the gray. But back then it was very, very, very fucking rigid and very dualistic. I saw the world as black and white. I saw myself as black and white. So the fact that I can't hide from that anymore, that it's on a sheet of paper or it's on a website and my friend can just randomly bring it up while we're out getting drinks, they can just be like, so how do you deal with your like borderline obsessive compulsive disorder? The fact that you can't let things go. And that's just conversation over a drink. It's not puppies and rainbows.
It doesn't, your whiskey.
Yeah. Like it doesn't, okay. The Enneagram doesn't feel good. And I think that's why a lot of people avoid it, because the things in there, in my experience, are very fucking accurate and very true. And they're very, very hard pills to swallow. It's all the things that I lied to myself about. There's also a lot of growth. There is some puppies and rainbows. There's a lot of great things that I can see. I see levels of improvement and affirmations and celebrities who are also my Enneagram type. Like there's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of things to keep me there. But for someone of my personality, that raw, that gritty, the details that like you're ashamed of, but you still need to hear, like that's the shit that drove me into it. So that's my first answer to that question. The second answer is, it is very much like the love languages, but on a much deeper scale. The way the love languages are relatable, you know, so in my experience, a lot of guys don't enjoy taking the love languages test. They don't enjoy taking personality tests in general. They don't need to know more about themselves because they already know enough. It's scary.
Bullshit.
Yeah, it is bullshit. I will get on a high horse all day long. You can call me preachy, call me whatever, but like guys don't fucking take enough time to learn about themselves. I don't know if it's out of fear or just pure ignorance, but like sit down, read a book, take some time, invest in yourself and like see what that can produce. And I'll stop there. Sorry.
Give me that soapbox part. Yeah. All right. Back to your regularly scheduled programming.
But it is very much like the love languages. And a lot of guys are typically forced into the love languages. You know, they've had plenty of uncomfortable moments or fights, or their marriage just isn't quite syncing up, or any relationship isn't syncing up. And chances are, and I would put money on this on the statistics, but chances are your wife or your partner has brought the love languages to you and said, hey, I really would love for us to sit down and look through this because I think it'll help. So the Enneagram is very much like that. It's not just telling you, hey, you really enjoy sunsets and long walks and you're a strong soul, but you're too quiet to ever say anything. Like those little Facebook tests that you can take and that tell you like a little bit of affirmation about yourself. It's always like you're a hidden warrior or you're this, you're that. Like there's always something. the love languages are more deep. They're applicable. Anyone can relate to feeling love. They've either felt it through parents or guardians or someone in their life, whether or not it doesn't have to be a spouse. They felt love through some type of relationship. And so they know how they enjoy that feeling. The thing that sold me post-divorce on the Enneagram was learning how it affects your relationships, because on the EnneagramInstitute.com, which I'll also throw that link into the show notes, they have relationship matchups. So you can just type in your Enneagram number or click your Enneagram number, and it shows your relation to any other Enneagram number. So while I was dating, I even retroactively looked back to see how compatible me and my ex-wife actually were. And when I clicked on the Enneagram relationship between a 1 and a 3, my jaw hit the fucking floor, because I swear to God, they were in a fight with us. Like, it literally read out exactly how we argued. And it scared me. It shook me. It inspired me. And that's why I pushed so hard on this shit. But that's been my experience of the Enneagram. I mean, has it been a revelation for you? I know you're not as deep into it as I am. And I don't really expect you to ever get that deep. It's not for everybody. It's a hobby to me. There's podcasts related to it. There's books. There's so much material. And all it does is take me further into myself whenever I want to. But have you had that experience to where you read something and you're like, yeah, that's me? Or you figure out something about you and your partner, and it's like, yeah, that really does describe our relationship. I want to go explore that further.
See, I'm very much the kind of person that doesn't really care about any of that. Like, the only reason I know my astrological sign is because people tell it to me all the time. Not that I necessarily have anything against them, like, I'm not anti personality test or any of that, but it just is not something that speaks to me. I really prefer, I feel like I'm a good people reader. And so I feel like if I get enough time with you, then I learn how my relationship needs to look with you. Now, that did not come through some grand lens. I think it was just me constantly fucking up relationships when I was younger and understanding that I was probably too bullheaded or selfish or rough when I should have been more empathetic or things like that. I think it's just part of getting older. But it really, like, everything I know about the Enneagram, I've learned from you. And to be honest, don't be mad at me, I haven't retained a ton of it. Some of the things in some of the earlier conversations had, like, right after.
I know you haven't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of the things were applicable right after the divorce when I hit some pretty heavy holes and I was having problems interacting with people or kind of finding myself. There would be nights where you would send me something about my type, which is a 6.
You're a counterphobic 6.
I'm a counterphobic 6. Yeah, because I think you were bashing 6s in the beginning of this. So fuck me.
No, I love 6. I'm married to a 6, Parker. I love 6s. Well, I love all numbers. Everyone has the chance to be great. So
there's your plug for it. Everybody's great. All the numbers.
Some people are just assholes, and it doesn't matter what type of number you are.
I mean, that's the truth. Statistically speaking, somebody's going to fuck up the party. Mm-hmm. That's just what's going to happen.
I've met quite a few ones that I hate, but sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. Some of the things can provide me some anchor points, but nothing has really been as earth-shattering, which is always why I'm curious to pick your brain on it. Because, like I said, my revelations with people come through more observing them and their relationships with other people. So
is it just not interesting to you? Do you not, like, what keeps you from learning more about it?
No, not really. To be honest, there's just, I mean, you know me, I hyperfixate on shit. It is not personality tests, but just not something. Yeah. Well, because it doesn't have anything to do with space. It doesn't have anything to do with technology. It doesn't have anything to do with aliens. So it's not in my realm, or punk pop music or cover songs or networking, you know, all the things that I cycle through. It's just not in my list. So it's not that I don't find it interesting, because when I do read an article that you sent me, or even when I downloaded the app and took the test, like, I found myself going through all the little brain, like, if it was a link, I clicked on it, right? Because I'm a curious human being and I like knowledge. But it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't groundbreaking to me. It wasn't anything that just shook my world and was like, oh, I now know how to communicate, or I know how to feel love. But probably because maybe I was, like, a little more in tune with, like, some of the love language stuff, and, like, being a psych major in college for a little while, like, helped me kind of understand a little bit about myself and some of my flaws. So maybe I gained some knowledge from that, just like an alternative path, right? You got your knowledge through the Enneagram and through diving that and how that breaks down personality types, and maybe I just got it somewhere else. But yeah, man, I just didn't click with me. Like I said, there's no aliens, there's no explosions, there's no IT, there's no network, there's no goblins, orcs.
You sound D20s. Like a generic dude now.
No, I was like, I mean, I like what I like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Enneagram played a big part with you because of your childhood and being homeschooled and the lack of like social interaction that you had at the high school and college level, right? Of having those constantly bumping into new personality types, right? And difficult people or easy people, and it constantly shifting every year, right? Because when you're in a public school system, or just when you're in the school system, people are cycling out every year. People move. You have to find new best friends. You eventually go from the middle school to the high school, things like that, right? There's a progression in society. Do you think that that played into why the Enneagram weighed in? Because it gave you a map that maybe you didn't have naturally.
So yes and no. That's something I've been curious about a lot of, and I haven't done a lot of research in this because like when you were in high school, did you slowly build patterns of how people interact and different personalities or just who people are? Or like, so if you knew a Jessica and a Todd in high school and you come across somebody else at a job later and you're just like, oh, this person's just like Jessica or they're just like Todd. Is that how your brain formulates it? Because for me, I never had that language. The Enneagram gave me a way to be like, oh, that person's totally a three. So did you just like that person's totally a Jessica?
In a simplified version, yes. Because okay. Jessica may be a very difficult person who's very confrontational and who is very stubborn. She wants to be right all the time. She wants to be correct. She thinks she has all the information, even when she's wrong. And when she's wrong, she won't back down. So I don't know what personality type that is. I don't know what kind of Myers-Briggs test that is, but I know that's Jessica. Mm-hmm. But I know Todd is sweet and loving and kind. And Todd is always open. And Todd always has fresh cookies for everyone. And Todd never says a bad word about anyone. It doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, what color you are, where you come from. Todd loves you for you. So I'd get older in life and be like, oh, that person's kind of like Todd, like you said, but it was more the characteristics like, oh, that's a sweet human being. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to categorize people like that. And same thing with backstabbing. You learn the people that you would tell secrets to, and then they'd run their, you know, everybody shows their true colors. Right. Mm-hmm. But it was through that social interaction that you learn that. You learn when to pick up on cues, when people are lying to you, when people are trying to ask weird questions to get certain information, or, you know, just like I said, what I would call, and I kind of feel weird calling it that now, but that natural social interaction and that conflict and resolution of just fucking, well, 300 kids in a high school in my case, which some people will only 300. Yes, that's it. It was, you know, 3,000 people in my town.
It's called Bald Knob. What can you do? Yeah.
Well, I still trip out when people have like graduating classes of like 10,000. And I'm like, yeah, that's literally three of my city that I grew up in. So I couldn't imagine having that many personalities to have to deal with. I had plenty to deal with in my class. And, you know, just in my class alone, there was 91 of us. That's how many graduated. So I had 91 people, though, over the course of 4 years to constantly have to battle with, like on the football field, in the classroom, in the hallway, over girls, over something I said, the way I dressed, the music I listened to, the car I drove, right? I constantly had conflict and resolution with all sorts of personalities. And that's including adults, right? People that were either loving and kind like a Todd or someone that was an asshole like a Jessica who just had to be right all the time. Mm-hmm. So you start realizing who people are. And I, like I said, I wonder how much that plays into yours.
I mean, since my social interaction wasn't maybe as broad as yours, that sounds very overwhelming and overstimulating personally. I mean, that's a lot of data to have to keep in your head. Like the Enneagram for me simplifies it. It breaks it down into 9 dominant personality types. And then if I really care about the person, then I can try to learn and understand them more. So I don't know. That honestly just sounds miserable to me.
Well, it's one of the reasons I am the way I am now, because I realize how many, and this is just peeling the layer back a little bit, but I realized in high school that I liked what I liked. Mm-hmm. I was an amalgamation of a lot of things. I liked to skateboard and smoke weed and play hacky sack. I also liked to, you know, play football. I also liked to play bass. I also liked to work on computers. So I hung out with a lot of different people, you know, literally everyone, from the people that were getting arrested every day to the jocks, to the nerds. I mean, I was captain of our chess team. I was on the quiz bowl team. I was everywhere. And I learned who I would gel with and who I didn't, right? So in your case, I found whatever my good Enneagram numbers were early on in life. Like I figured out the weirdos and the outcasts and the people that kind of stuck out. Mm-hmm. And those were the people that I liked and enjoyed. So
That's interesting, but it still kind of sounds surface level to me. I mean, it sounds like a crossword puzzle. I was trying to find the right analogy there, but it sounds like a crossword puzzle.
I was like, explain.
There's a lot of letters on the board, and you got to dig in there and try to find the words. So you're digging through all these different people to try to find the words that you line up with, that you can at least see. That doesn't mean it's all the words that are there, but that's the words you can see and you gravitate towards. For me, getting to know people doesn't feel that heavy anymore. As I start to see individuals unwrap their layers and expose themselves a little bit more into who they are, as soon as I know somebody's number, and hopefully they've already done the work and know their Enneagram number, but if someone can tell me their Enneagram number, I automatically feel like I have a backlog of information about what drives that person, what angers them, what makes them feel good, how they can feel valuable, how they can feel seen, what makes them tick. Like, I have all this information of how I can interact with this person. And that's been extremely helpful. And I'm wondering if that's why it feels overstimulating to me now, hearing that jumbled mess of of a crossword puzzle. Just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I like my dictionary. I can look shit up. I know what I'm looking for. It's easy.
Well, keep in mind, it's not overwhelming when you're in it. It's overwhelming when you summarize 9 years of public school. But in reality, these interactions start super early. Like, I was listening to you describe if I find someone's type, right, then I can start to dig a little deeper. Like, once I figure out, like, you know, what that person is. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the same thing that I'm going to say we're doing, as in public school kids. I'm going to take a stance and speak for us.
That's fine.
So public school kids start this super early, right? Like, you figure out in kindergarten, someone takes your blanket. Someone doesn't want to share toys with you. You don't want to deal with that person, right? You figure out that person's an asshole. So you find the kid that does share, and that's your friend. Or maybe you're one of those asshole kids. And so you pair up with all the other asshole kids. But it builds layers upon itself, exactly kind of what you were saying, as you go through life. And people shift and mold and drop interest and change. And so you're kind of, when you're in it and the waves are moving and everything's constantly going up and down, it's not too bad. I guess it can kind of be, you know, all those teenage angsty years where you're trying to find yourself and figure things out and changing friends. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel overwhelming to me because that's the process that I learned. This is the process of how I read people. In the same way that you go, if I can get your Enneagram number, I can know what makes you tick and things like that. If I can have a 20-minute conversation with you and I can see how you speak about certain things and the weight that you put on certain things or certain topics in conversation, I feel like I can do the same thing. But I feel like my skill set was driven through forced public interaction, and yours was, I mean, to your point, I think your analogy is honestly great. It's a dictionary. You didn't get a chance to kind of learn it, like, it's weird to say, like, on the streets, but you know what I mean, right? Like, you didn't learn it like in a classroom. So after the fact, as an adult, you were able to find something that almost had the history of the personality, and it allowed you to catch up for lost time, I think is what I'm trying to get to. So if the Enneagram was your dictionary, how did you actually start applying it? What was the first relationship or person that it actually provided some clarity to you for?
I would say the first external circumstance that I was able to apply the Enneagram would be with my friend Eric. I've mentioned him several times in the show, but Eric is a bit of an asshole. I love him to death, but he loves chaos and he likes to just say mean shit. And I can respect that because there's a beauty in saying mean things. There's an art form to saying mean things and having people not just hate you. And I always appreciated that about Eric. I met him in a life group. He was very abrasive. He said the things that I thought, but I would never in a million years say. And so I just thought that was really fun to have someone speak my mind. I said, speak my mind, not their speak their mind. But that was true.
That's exactly what you meant. Yeah. He was speaking your mind. The anger that you felt, he just vocalized.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was very comforting. And so as I'm getting to know Eric, you know, our friendship blossoms. And I learned that Eric is an Enneagram 8. So Enneagram 8s are just generically assholes. I would just like to go ahead and say that they're the scourge of the Enneagram community because everyone just has to learn how to deal with an 8. It's not, oh, that 8 is just an awesome person. It's how the fuck do I deal with you?
Maybe the rest of y'all are fucked up and the eights are right. How about that one?
It could be. About that one? And that right there is one of the reasons I've thought you were an eight several times. So I'm getting to know Eric. And like I said, he's an awesome guy. There's a lot of layers there. And with him being an eight and me learning more about eights, it wasn't just, oh, Eric is a little rough. It was, no, Eric has a really beautiful soul. He had to grow up way too early and he's been protective his entire life. He's always had to work very hard for what he has. And learning that about him let me know that it's not just all bark, that he's not just an aggressive person. He feels like he needs to establish his place in any room, in any conversation, because that's where he feels valued. So one of the best examples of using the Enneagram and finding the depth that someone can hold is me and my ex-wife and Eric and his wife are out in the hill country of Texas. I think it's called Wimberley, beautiful little town. And there's just like these Joshua trees all over the place. Deer just run wild. It's a very wealthy community, beautiful river. So we go there for a weekend. We're all hanging out. I think our second night there, me and Eric are sitting out in a hot tub smoking cigars. And quite honestly, just having a beautifully romantic moment between two dudes. And it was a great time.
Aw, bromance.
So Eric has a song he wants to share with me. It's by Sleeping at Last. This guy ended up producing 9 songs for all 9 numbers of the Enneagram. And he just so happened to release number 1, My Type, a week before we go out to the hill country. So Eric is super excited to share this song with me. I almost cry. It's extremely emotional. It hit every point that describes me. It's very weird to have a song that feels like it's written about me. I would imagine it's how any of Taylor Swift's boyfriends feel. But so we're sitting there listening to the song. It's really beautiful. I feel seen and heard. And then Eric seems to find this little seam, like a little gap in the conversation where he's willing to like break out of his armor, break out of the aggressiveness, this asshole mentality, this blunt shit that he likes to spew all the time. And he opens up and he starts telling me about his childhood, how he's the oldest. He's always had to help his sisters get ready for school and get off for the day. He felt like he was as much of a parent to his siblings as his parents were. He felt more friendly towards his parents than anything. And me and Eric just start having this extremely in-depth, deep conversation. And I did not know this guy had layers like that. We had a lot of commonalities. We were both very big into music, big into church, big into cooking, drinking, all this stuff. But now, instead of just commonalities, I see a part of this guy's soul. Like I see a part of who he is, that he does care. Most of his aggressiveness is just out of him being expressive and protective of everyone that he loves. He likes to bark just to see who will bark back. And if someone will bark back, that's a friend. And it was just this beautiful moment that me and him got to have.
And you don't feel like that moment would have been possible without your understanding of the Enneagram, your type, and how you communicate, and then knowing Eric and his type and being able to apply his story to the Enneagram this all checks out.
I think it could have been possible. It would have taken an insanely large amount of time. I mean, I'm talking probably another 5 years of friendship before we ever found ourselves in a moment intimate enough where we felt safe to just talk about who we are.
Yeah. Well, to me, what I've heard from you is that the truth is that, yeah, it would have been possible, but the Enneagram was your cheat code, right? It was an easier way for you to decipher. It gave you a base of knowledge that you didn't have before because you were starting from scratch with every human being you ran into, and you no longer start from scratch.
Never. I think the only way that me and Eric could have reached that level of depth in our friendship where we truly understood the inner workings of who each of us are would be if like our parent died. Or someone close to us like had died or a tragedy happened. Like that's the only way that I've had experience opening up to other guys. We're very guarded individuals. We need to be alpha male. We can't expose our insecurities. Otherwise it makes us less human or less, I don't know, manly. So having the Enneagram, it just breaks all that shit down. Cause like, it's like you get to talk about yourself in disguise. It's just a back door into those intimate, hard conversations. And I have used the Enneagram so many times back when I was dating. I put it on my dating profile. It was great icebreaker conversations. Anytime I was on a first date, I would ask a girl if she knew what the Enneagram was. It was like 90% of the time they did. I think in my entire time dating, I met two other women that didn't know what the Enneagram was. The rest of them did. And it immediately allowed me to have an hour-long conversation with another person, another stranger, just based on the fascinating history of like who we are, how that links up with what our type is, and how that could relate to each other.
I mean, in the wild realm of dating, there's a whole series of conversations I want to have. So I'm not ignoring the fact that Enneagram helped you in dating.
We'll table that one.
Yes, for now we will. But I love that you found the Enneagram and how important it was to you, because it allowed you, like we said, it gave you a cheat code. It allowed you to peel back layers on people quicker than, you know, you were able to previously. And I think that anytime you can add something like that to your skill set that allows you to empathize and communicate with people in a more effective manner is, I mean, I don't see anything negative about it.
Yeah, you nailed it. I'm more curious though. Like, it is beautiful. I know it's beautiful, but are you any more curious about the Enneagram? Like, are you going to not retake your test, but are you going to start diving into how it affects other relationships and stuff?
Well, I'll be 100% honest with you. I get all of my knowledge from the Enneagram that I need from you. It's weird because it's almost like you're my little subscription service.
I'll take that.
I don't have to seek out the Enneagram because Stephen Woodson will hand deliver me what I need to know about the Enneagram when I need to know it.
I think that's the way a lot of people in my life treat it. Cause I mean, literally with my mother-in-law, like she was like, I need to figure out my number. I still don't know my number. She called Bailey and she's like, I need to talk to Steven. I need to have him help me figure out her number. So like, I don't love that, but I'll respect that. Cause like, I know I'd go on and on about it.
Well, selfishly, I would much rather ask you about it and have a conversation with you about it rather than Googling it. So anytime I do have an Enneagram question, I come to you. Which sparks, you know, the conversations that me and you have, the bro therapy, the long nights, the this and that, the counterphobic six, the whatever that, the upside down nine, and the, you know, purple green bean or whatever, you know, triad and quadrant you get into. But it's all fascinating when I start having the conversation with you, because it's, here's from my side, okay, is that I am not ever going to dive into the Enneagram as deep as you have. But I love having conversations with you about the Enneagram because I don't have that viewpoint in my back pocket. Mm-hmm. So the type of human being that I am, I love knowing how people view situations through all walks of life. You offer a perspective that I don't have. Therefore, it is very fun for me to seek it out. And I don't call you and say, hey, Steven, as a one, what do you think about this? But there'll be stories and tidbits or jokes that I'll give you to see how you react, or stories that I tell you, and it gives me your perspective on that story or that scenario. So that's kind of how I get it. So I get the Enneagram from you by osmosis, just through interacting with you.
I'll take that. I mean, I think that's fine. For anybody else that doesn't have someone in their life that just obsessively learns about the Enneagram like I do, I'm going to load up the show description with all kinds of links for this. So in there, you're going to find the Enneagram Institute. You're going to find the Ennea app. One of my favorite resources for all things Enneagram is another podcast that I listen to on pretty much a weekly basis. It's called Typology with Ian Morgan Cron. Ian Morgan Cron wrote the book, The Road Back to You, which is all about the Enneagram. A lot of people have considered it almost a Bible of the Enneagram because it's a great gateway into learning about it. He writes decent stories and gives descriptions of the types, and then also has little quizzes and tests in there to help you find your type. And on top of that, I would highly encourage anyone out there slightly curious about anything we talked about tonight, just go take your Enneagram test. It's about 10 to 15 minutes, only so many questions. It just gets your foot in the door. And if that inspires you at all, honestly, selfishly, I just wanted to bring this up in our show because I talk about the Enneagram all the time and I wanted to continue talking about the Enneagram all the time. It has been so damn hard for me, Parker, for what is it? We're at 21 episodes total for the show now. And I have like had to purposely leave out my Enneagram number and mentioning the word because I didn't want anyone to think that I was in a cult. So I've left it out of the show for this long and I want to start using the fucking language. So.
Well, you stole my last question because my last question was, is it a cult? Because through everything we talked through and through how passionate you are about it, it does sound a little robe Kool-Aid-y, a little bit.
I have four sad stashes. I've only had 3 sips of Kool-Aid. No, I'm kidding. there may be some of that out there. The symbol alone, I should have given this disclaimer at the top. The symbol alone looks like a pentagram. It is not.
It is rough.
Yeah.
It does look a little rough. They need a marketing guy for sure.
It's also not the Star of David. It's its own entity. No one really knows where the Enneagram came from. It's some people believe that it came from Catholicism and one of the popes. There's literally an article out there where an alien brought it down to Earth. It's all over the map. That's also one
what the fuck did you just time the fuck out? Did you just say an alien brought it?
You know, I wish I thought of this earlier, because when you said that it doesn't involve aliens, you're not interested. But there is an article, and I'll find the link to the website for you. I'm not going to put that shit in the show notes, but this is for you, Parker. I'm going to send you the link, because someone out there does believe that it did come down from an alien. So I will give that to you later.
Following that guy on Twitter immediately.
So basically, this whole thing has just been a selfish ploy so I can talk more about the Enneagram. But if you're interested in the Enneagram, I'm also going to plug it in our Discord. I want to create a space for people to ask questions about the Enneagram. I will either try to provide you links or answer them myself. But what are you celebrating this week?
So I am actually celebrating training. As you know, cycling season has started. The weather is starting to get nice. Yeah. So I've got a few races that I'm trying to line up for the rest of the year. I'm going to try to do my first 100-mile race, followed very shortly by my second 100-mile race. And I've been hitting the road pretty hard. So change my diet, and not diet as in less calories, right? Like I'm actually eating more calories because I'm going on these 30 and 50-mile rides. Yeah. But I'm just, I'm putting myself back in that mindset of grind, that day zero white belt mindset of it's time to get in and put in work. So I'm actually celebrating that. It's another reason I'm dog tired and consistently and tired is that the second I leave work, I put on my nice little cycling shorts, my helmet and my top, and I go hit 50 miles out by Penny. I give her a high five and then come back home. But it's a blast. It's pushing me and it's giving me kind of a new fire in life. It's giving me something else to conquer. So I'm celebrating training.
Hell yeah. I honestly need to go give Penny a high five myself. I haven't been out there in a hot minute.
She's beautiful, man. She's still as pretty as ever. So
I wouldn't expect anything less from her. this week I'm celebrating small moments. I'll get a little existential for a second, but my daughter is on vacation with her dad this week. And so we've been missing her super, super hard, and just getting to FaceTime with her, even for 5 minutes, and just seeing her beautiful little face and her just grinning and excited to see us, man, those little bitty moments that I can just cherish. And I've been trying to do this more and more this week of just trying to do my breathing exercises, not get lost in my head, but just really hone in on what's happening in this moment, not what is needing to be done or what I did yesterday, just like what is happening right now. And I'm very grateful, and I'm celebrating my daughter this week because she helped me see that. It's just seeing her gorgeous little face and just smiling at us and just really excited. Just, I don't know, warm my heart is beautiful.
Kids make the problems melt away, man. Anytime you get to see them grin, laugh, little pitter patter of feet through the hallway, and it's quiet as hell when they're not there. Oh, and it's nice for a little bit, but then it just, that silence sucks. So
as soon as she leaves, I'm like, okay, we can relax. I don't have any responsibility. It's like, damn it, I want her to come home.
Like an hour later, like you go pee, get a drink, step outside, and you're like, what do I do now? Like, I don't understand. Awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. That's going to do it for us this week. Check out our hefty show description for all the links of all things Enneagram and anything else that I find interesting. And as always, don't forget to celebrate yourself, keep your mental health in check, and keep growing.
Hit that woo.